Coasters.
Remember Coros?
Thank you.
I guess you could ski home down the hill, but skiing up the hill would be... Okay. So, I thought that we would start with a quasi-halachic topic related to the Parsha. That is on the page that you got, that is the two columns, so the other side that we're showing. And these are two tshuvos from Rav Moshe Feinstein on the topic of secular names. Now, what do secular names have to do with the Parsha?
They didn't change names.
Right. We all know the Chazal, that says one of the three or perhaps four things for which the Jewish people merited redemption was Lo Shinau Shemam. And this is a common question, which is that many people do have secular names. Many people are called by their secular names. Is this a bad thing? What about Chazal? So that's what we're going to consider tonight. So the halachic and hashkafic issues relating to secular names. We'll begin with two tshuvos from Rav Moshe Feinstein on the topic. The first one is from Evan Ha'ezer, Chelek Gimel Siman Lamed Hei. The context here relates to how one would write secular names on a get, and that doesn't really concern us for the moment, but you'll see that a lot of the print is in very, very small, which is the part of the tshuva that doesn't relate to us. But we'll start from the beginning. Be'inyan Hashemos She'orer Kvoto Raso She'be'medina Zu Kemat Ruba Deruba Af Mi'irei Hashem Yisbarach Ve'af Me'rabanim Nikra'im B'Shemos HaNachrim Shel HaMedina Me'Shemos Anglian. Most people, even Yerei Shemaim, even rabbis, are called by English names. The truth is, I think, perhaps there are more people called by their Hebrew names now than when this tshuva was written. It's probably much more common for people to be known by their Hebrew names than, let's say, in a generation of my parents. My parents and all of their friends that I could think of are all known by English names, though I think many of their children are known by their Hebrew names. So I think, and that's a good thing. But it's still a problem. Asher hu neged hashavach sheshibchu chazal es avoseinu b'mitzrayim. This goes against the praise that Chazal gave to our forefathers in Egypt. B'kama midrasho shaloshinu v'shemam u'v'shil zeh nigalu b'mitzrayim. So he notes, again skipping, afshe be'es sheshchilu likros b'shemus hanachum desfas Ashkenaz. Right, many names that we think of as Jewish names are Yiddish names, and the truth is that the Yiddish names aren't Hebrew names either. They're very, I don't know, Liba? What do you say?
Yiddish.
Certainly Yiddish. So that's interesting there, because Liba, no, Liba's in the middle, because it's a Yiddish name that comes from the Hebrew word, right?
Lev. I always have to think it's Aramaic.
Right, okay, maybe. We're going to talk about it. He's actually going to mention Aramaic. No, but I just meant that it's not German, right? Liba is not German. It's Yiddish from the Hebrew. So I'll see if that makes a difference. But many, you know, very Yiddish, Jewish, frum-sounding names like Bear and Wolf and the like are totally German. L'chein matzinu she'mos nachrim b'sfardim. It's not just the Ashkenazim that do this. He quotes the Magen Mishnah, Arishon, the famous commentary on the Rambam. What was his name? Vidal. Right? That doesn't sound very Hebrew. What was the Rambam's father's name? Maimon. Also doesn't sound very Hebrew. And not just that, we'll see in a moment, many of the Amoraim also had Babylonian sounding names, not Hebrew sounding names. So this goes quite way back. So he says that Uvivade Mitchila Tzavchu Alzeh, when the practice started, presumably the Rabbanim protested. But as we know, it's not new. Not everybody listens to the protests of the rabbis. And they became very common. ולכן גם שמות אנגליים שבמדסינים קדומה בארץ אחרת שגם כן יש לצווח על זה, you should protest, אבל לא ידוע הגבול עד כמה לנו לצווח. It's not clear how much we should protest, meaning to say that one has to pick their battles, and it's not necessarily the case that this should be the thing that the rabbis are fighting about, are screaming about, are protesting, because there are perhaps more important issues. But he continues, "Mitzad etzma davar shemeshanim shemosim l'shemos nachrim vadei hu davar meguna ma'od." It's meguna. It's disgusting, inappropriate. Me'achas shechazal shemchu ze. After all, Chazal did praise the Jews for it. V'chashvu ze me'advarim shebeshvilam nigalu minitzrayim. Aval iser mamish lo matzinu b'ze. Though it's perhaps not ideal, it's not aser. Now, the truth is there were some chachamim in the 19th century who argued that it was aser, around the time when the contemporaries of the Chasam Sofer and the like, and that was perhaps part of their very, very important and strident battle against reformers. And there are a number of things that perhaps somewhat for historical considerations they felt were halachically prohibited. Things like drashos in vernacular as opposed to Yiddish, weddings in bate knesios and the like, even though that was something that happened in the times of the Rishonim. But be that as it may, the Rav Moshe says it's certainly not aser. Though again, there were some poskim who did think it's aser, but he thinks it's not aser. V'hu kimo lo shinu l'shonam degam kein hu me'arba dvarim shechashiv hasam. Says, let's look at some of the other things. Lo shina l'shonam. So we are now giving a shir in English, and we talk to each other in English. Shechazina she'afshu mitzvah l'dabr lashon kodesh. It's a mitzvah to speak in lashon kodesh, as it says in the Sifrei, v'hu v'birashi on the Chumash l'dabr ba mikol makom eino iser. It's not an iser to speak in English. Dakol Yisrael medabrin lashon chol shel ha'umos mizman shegalinu b'chatoenu bein ha'umos. This is what we've done since we've been in exile. V'af gedoli Torah v'chasidei olam lo dibru b'lashon ha'kodesh. And he quotes the Rambam, who talks about how the Jews in Galus even forgot lashon ha'kodesh. That was one of the reasons why the Rambam says they were misakein a tefillah that is Shmona Esrei, that as opposed to the original institution where people davened using whatever they felt personally, spontaneously. And the reason is because people were no longer able to speak properly in Lashon HaKodesh. They started mixing together Babylonian and Hebrew, and that was a problem. It's an interesting question, what's so bad about mixing it? But the Rambam thinks that was problematic. Anyhow, so it's not just tefillah. V'lachein kevan she'eno iser rak mala gedola lahoilu hatzvicha. Since it's not aser, the protests didn't work. Meaning to say that sometimes when chachamim can say things are aser, so then people might listen. When the rabbanim of each generation, but when the rabbanim of various generations say, well, it's not ideal, it's not ideal, but it can't say it's aser, so then those types of statements are often disregarded. So in this first tshuva, he doesn't give any justification. He says it's not aser, but it's not ideal. Now, in the next tshuva we're going to see, there's a more specific question, and in the end he is actually going to offer a justification, at least a partial justification. The context in this next tshuva is not Shemos and Gittin, but a person who wanted to know if he should name after his mother in a non-Hebrew name. So that was the question. So, skipping to where it's bolded, on, again, right column, most of the way down. V'kama ga'onim k'dim mashkechinim b'tshuvas rishonim v'gam shemaimon aviv shal arambam k'nir shehulaz shalachin chas v'shalom lomar shalasuk hogan. So, here, he's saying that we can't really say, it would be inappropriate to say that Gedolei Torah, who had secular names, were acting inappropriate. Now, the truth is, you know, maybe the Maimon's father wasn't such a chash of a person. Right? Maimon, we know, was a great Talmud Chacham, Rabbeinu Maimon, but he didn't name his son a secular name. He named him Moshe. But anyway, we don't want to... Well, Maimon said there were great people with these names, and we don't want to say, we can't say that they were wrong. Why? He says an interesting thing. Once these names became common among the Jews, then it is no relevance to the Gnai. Meaning to say, let's go back to the name Liba, right? So you're not the first Liba. So there were many Libas before you. So could be that the first Liba, again, maybe Liba anyway is different because it comes from Lev, but whatever it is, the first wolf, the first bear, so, or Sprinza, or Etel. So all those names, maybe the first ones weren't ideal because they were taking German names and the like. But eventually they became Jewish names, right? If you hear the name Bear, you don't think of, I don't know if non-Jewish Germans are called Bear anymore. But it's associated now as a Jewish name. All these Yiddish names are Jewish. They sound more Yiddish than anything. So since they became commonly associated as Jewish names, then they're no longer considered Goyish names. Ve'en l'shanos l'kro shem b'no o shem b'ito al shemos hazkenim v'azkenos nikro shemos laz shu inyan kavod ha'mishpacha av shem idur ha'kodem shal kopanim ikka lav l'chabdom. And therefore, in this case the question was honoring your parents by naming your child after your parent. So we should do that mitzvah of honoring our parents and calling them, naming them after these names, even if these names were originally Gaish names, they became Jewish names. For Kol Shekhin Sheish Alav Likro Al Shem Horav Mam, is certainly when you can call them after your parents. Shechayev B'chvodam, it's a mitzvah Kibud Av Ha'Em. V'gam B'divrei Chazal B'Midrashim Isa Shekhor Na'achshav Aban V'Abanos Al Shem Doros Ha'Kdom Kodman. There's a very fascinating medrash. I'm not going to discuss it now, but an interesting point. The medrash notes that originally names were made up, like in Tanakh. And in the later generations, we stop making up names, but instead call people after the previous generations. And that includes these Yiddish names. And when it's for one's parents, it's especially important because of Kibud Av Ha'Em. So therefore, Tzarch L'Kro, Kefi Hashem Shenikru, Af Shehu Shem Laz, Belo Shinoi. So then one should call them after their parents, even though it's a Laz name, a non-Hebrew name, without any Shinoi, right? If the parent was named Rizal Freda, so the daughter should be named, or the granddaughter should be named Rizal Freda, even though those aren't Yiddish names. This guy was very lucky because he had Rav Moshe name his daughter. So apparently, he asked the Shaila while she was still pregnant. So when your daughter, when your wife gives birth, Techia b'shatova mutzlachas, v'havlad tia bas. Wonder if it was. Maybe they knew, I don't know. Anyway, so Tikra Osal Shem Imcha Alea Shalom, you should call her, name her after your mother. Aval Mikeven Shimcha Alea Shalom Mesa Tzeira Biyamim, since your mother died at a very young age, V'gam Shelo Kederach Stam Mesim, she didn't die in a normal way, it sounds like there was some type of tragedy, Yeah, kedai likro mishemos imcha rak shem gittel. So you should only call her one of the two names that your mother had, namely Gittel. In other words, because of the tragic circumstances surrounding your mother's death, you shouldn't take both of her names. In other words, you know, Rav Moshe said before, when naming after a parent, one should name exactly after the parent. Many of the Sfarim say that whatever is accomplished naming after a person, so that is only accomplished when you name exactly after the person. So if you change the name to Hebraicize a Yiddish name or the like, then or you only do one out of the two names, so then that isn't considered at least fully naming after. Now, sometimes, though, you want to do it. That's what Rav Moshe is saying. Sometimes you don't actually want to name the person after the deceased, in this case, because of the tragedy surrounding her death. So therefore, your dafka should change. So therefore, pick the name Gittel. Kishem Drezel, Belsafa Sandalas, Lo Yaduali, Eza Shemu, Uvelo Shemuvan. I don't know what this other name is, Drezel. In other words, I've heard of Drezel, but I've never heard of Drezel. So since I don't know what the name is, doesn't make any sense, just do Gittel. So this guy's mother's name was Gittel Drezel, or Drezel Gittel, and he's saying, just pick the name Gittel. You know, of the two, Gittel makes more sense, and you don't want to do the exact name in these circumstances. Lahosef Oche Mishemos Hatzidkanio. So then you want something besides just Gittel, so pick a name from the Tzidkanio Shebekrai Sheladaiti Hayatov Im Afshar B'Shem Chana. Oh, what a lucky guy. V'tikra Shema V'tikra Gittel Chana. So he recommended Chana. So he said, you should name your daughter Gittel Chana. V'gam Yesh Likro Gam Chana Gittel, if that's what you prefer, you could do Chana Gittel or Gittel Chana V'ein K'peid B'zeh. In other words, once you're making up a new name, there's no need to pick a Yiddish name, so pick a name from the Nashim Tzidkanios in Tanakh. Uma Shemashma Mimichtavcha Shashem Tzipora. Okay, then he goes into a discussion of where Tzipora comes from. Is it really from the word Tzipor? He doesn't think so. Fine, skip to the underlined. Uvimlaka Shumtam L'Shum Shem. Yesh vada livchor b'shem echad me'anevim v'atzadikim shebekrai. So if you have no person you need a name after, so then who should you pick? Don't pick a Yiddish name at that point. May as well pick someone from Tanakh, from the tzadikim and the neviim. Oh, b'mi shehikarnuhu b'dor zeh letzadik v'gaon v'af kshuchai. Or from someone in this generation. In other words, pick a person who you know is great. Could be someone in Tanakh. It could be someone alive today. It doesn't matter if they're alive. Interesting point. There's an Ashkenazi practice not to name after living people. This is a Ashkenazi practice. Sfaradim don't. In the times of the Gemara, it doesn't seem like they had that kapeda. But it's something that Ashkenazim should continue to follow. But apparently that's not, Rav Moshe assumes, with respect to naming after Tzidkanim v'Tzidkanios. That's maybe with respect to relatives or parents or the like. But when it comes to Tzadikim, so if you know a Tzadik or a Tzadekes, and this is someone who you wish your child to be like, even though they're alive, you can name them after them. And therefore, you may as well pick someone, either a Tanakh name or a contemporary tzaddik or tzaddikas. V'hinei be'etzem, ha-matzinu har b'shem o'shel amoraim, shenikru b'shem de'aramis. He notes that even among the amoraim, we have very Aramaic-sounding names, kegon Rav Papa, v'Rav Zvid, Umar Zutra, Umar Kshisha, Umar Yanuka, v'od har b'magonim rubim nikru b'shem aramis. Achula yishlomar de'aramishani. So he makes the point that you said before, but maybe Aramaic is different. In other words, there's an aspect of Kedusha to Aramis that perhaps is different than other languages. We find Tanakh partially written in Aramaic. Yagar Sa'adusa, and Chumash, and parts of Sefer Daniel, and Talmud Bavli, and the Zohar, and the like. So perhaps there's an exception over there. Kedish Rishami Sota, Lote Lashna Rami Kalabe Nachash, Areu Nimta Betor, Nevin Uksuvim. Bavli, Yerushalmi, and the like. Okay, so maybe it's different. V'hine, I'm skipping to where it's bolded. Yesh makom lomar, dezeh sheshilchu chazal. So now he's getting back finally to the question we started with, which is that that how could it be that we have so many people with secular names if, after all, this was the schus for which we were redeemed? So the answer is about to give. He says very hesitantly, if you actually skip to the bottom line, it says, Basha Mustaber came, this answer I'm about to tell you makes sense. Mistafina Lomar Zebelo Rayos Gdolos, I'm afraid to say it without any Rayos. The Maral more or less says the same thing, and we'll read it inside in a moment, but the basic idea that the Maral says, or Moshe says, is the following. That why was it so important that in Mitzrayim, Lo Shinu Shemam, Lo Shinu Mabusham, etc.? That's because that's all they had. They didn't have the Torah. So all they had is these cultural, sociological practices that made them Jewish. But what makes us Jewish? What defines us as a people? The Torah. So we have the Torah, we have the Halacha, and though again, Hebrew names are very nice, but that's not definitional. As opposed to when it comes to the Jewish people in Mitzrayim, Lahavdil, and this is very sad. There are some people who are no longer observant. Already now, for many generations, they no longer really associate Torah and mitzvot with Judaism. So what do they associate it? It's like a club, you know, gefilte fish and bagels and lox or chicken soup or all these other sociological, cultural identifications. And that's all that's left. You know, it's also not so surprising that when all that's left is the special foods, that it's hard to transmit that, because it's just a bunch of foods after all. You know, filter fish is nice, but if you fall in love with a non-Jewish person, you know, it's not going to swing the balance. But anyway, so the Jewish people in Mitzrayim, all they had was, for the most part, were these, you know, bagels and lox, or lashonam shmam albusham. But for us, we have the Torah. That's really what defines us as a people. And therefore, these ancillary things, these sociological things, are still nice, but not critical in the same way. Right? So let's read that inside. That was who, second line, where it's bolded, who lekodem matan Torah. Shloya heker gadol b'shvil kiyum ha-mitzvos dibnei noach. Remember, in those days, the Jewish people of Mitzrayim, they kept their names, but they didn't actually even keep the most significant characteristic of the Jewish people, which was they were monotheists. We think of it as a great schus. They were nigalu because loshinu shmam malbusham and lashonam, right? But adarabba, that's it. There's, we couldn't have said they were nigalu because of bris milah, because they didn't keep bris milah. We couldn't say they were nigalu because they were ovdei Hashem, they were monotheists, because they were polytheists. All they had left, nebuch, were these cultural identifiers. And it was because at least they kept these, they held on to their heritage in some small way, that they were redeemed. Yeruban Lamalus Bineam, Achamachlagulak Shayutrichan Lachala Pesach Shemalos and Yoshua, Umash Meshayrov, Gadol, Levad, Shevet Levi, most of the Jews, with the exception of Shevet Levi, that continued to circumcise themselves. Shemalos Bineam Kidirsevu Vishayin so Rubirkas Moshe. Dashrish Rashi, Al Elu Shinoldu Bamidbar, Hayazagam Pamitzrayim, Kamifors Pamidrashos. Shulchan b'shvil amuna sheyigalu v'ratzu sheyu nikarim shem Yisrael hanigu l'akbet shelo yishanu shmam v'lo yishanu es l'shonam umitam zeh shayach zeh l'ageula. So it's actually a beautiful mita keneged mita. Why does it say that they were redeemed because of their these three things? Because why did they retain these identities? The Jewish names and language and dress and the like. That was because they wanted to remain distinct so that they would be redeemed. Because the Jewish people never lost that faith. Right? That's why when Moshe comes back, it says that the Jewish people believed in him. Pakod yifkod eskem. They had that code word passed down from Yaakov. And because they retained that hope for Geula, they retained these names, and therefore in that schus they were in fact redeemed. Aval achar matan Torah ein lanu chiyav midina. But after matan Torah, there's no longer an obligation. The gam lo minyani zehiros u'musar. It's not even necessary because of zehiros u'musar. Meaning to say, even though he said before it's g'nai. But still, it's not even Zihiros and Moser, Elamashin, it's Davinu Atariag Mitzvos, Ladoros. What is it that distinguishes us, the Tariag Mitzvos? The Mitzvoshin, it's Davu Lasha'a. Ukufishin emu betorosh balpeh, Vilachain, Lokpidu al Zerabosenu. Deha af in Yane Zihiros, Umoser, Umala, Nami, Nemu, Messinai, Ayan Beresh, Perke Avos. Very beautiful thing he's saying here, that we have a tradition going back to Sinai. Even about things like what he's calling Zihirus, Musar, and Mila, as it says in the Rav at the beginning of Pirkei Avos. What does it say over there? He just says Ayin Pirkei Avos B'Rav. Rav is Rav Avadi Mibartanu Rav. So what does Rav Avadi Mibartanu say over there? Very beautiful insight. The Rav is bothered by the fact that Pirkei Avos alone opens up with the Shalshalas HaMesora. Moshe Kibbol Torah Mesinai, Musar Yeshua. Why? I would think that that statement should be said at the beginning of Brachos, at the beginning of the first Mishnayos, right? Avos is at the end of Nezikin. So we've already gotten through Zrayim, Moed, Nashim, Nezikin, almost four full Sedarim. Why wait till Pirkei Avos to say the Shalshalas HaMesora? Very strange, right? So the Rav says like this, because the earlier things we knew that they came from Hashem, right? Brachos, Pei, Admai, Arla, nobody had a Havamina that Arla is something that anyone made up. But what's Pirkei Avos about? It's about ethics, right? That's what they call it, the ethics of our fathers. So ethics, a person would think, that you don't need a Mesora for that. Everybody just makes up what they think makes sense. And it's Dafka, therefore, at the beginning of Avos, to show us that even ethics comes from Moshe Mesinai. So he's saying that we have a tradition, we have Torah, we have ethics, all that is what we know based off of our tradition, and that's what defines us as Jews. Shekein ikka mailagam al achar matan Torah. So maybe it was only something chashev for them, the Jewish people, and not after Matan Torah. It's very interesting, because there does seem to be a bit of a development. Earlier we saw that he said it's a genai, and it's something that the Rabbanim were tzavchu, were protested. Maybe they didn't protest a lot, because it wasn't Aser. But it's something that was wrong, though not Aser. That was what we saw in the first tshuva. In the second tshuva, it seems like he's changed his stance a bit. And in this chiddush that he says here at the end, he's saying that maybe it's not even something that's so bad after all. Again, he's hesitant about it. He writes, though this makes sense, I'm afraid to say it. Because there are no raios, but as I said as well, there is a maral that's a similar thing. There's a lot more on this topic. I want to go on to the next topic. But I'll just mention an interesting thing that I found while researching this topic, which is that there are actually three categories in halachic sources of names. There is the name, your Hebrew name, you know, what's given at your naming, at a bris, or at when the father's called to the Torah. Then there was a Yiddish name, and then there, which is what people would call you, like your friends. This was, you know, going back 1,000 years. And then there was a Goyish name that many people had, depending on the times. That was necessary for government interactions or the like. This was much more recent, only in the last several hundred years since emancipation did that third category of names come from, you know, Richard and Howard and Roger and all those things. But anyway, so that middle category, there's actually a ceremony. I don't know if anyone does this anymore, but the Rishonim talk about this ceremony, Halach Kreis, I don't even know how to read it exactly, but where they would basically, sounds like it would take place, that name is found in Maran Mintz, but it's describing a ceremony that the Rishonim had before, where the first week the mothers would go to shul, all the little kids would call this baby by their Yiddish name, and they would throw candy at it or fruits or other things, and there was like a ceremony. So it's very very interesting. Again, I don't know if anyone that does that anymore. Okay.
Go in there for just a second. I'm making room in a second. But is this why Rav Chaim Kanievsky is opposed to certain names also?
No. Rav Chaim Kanievsky Shita is different. Because Rav Moshe here doesn't state that he has any objection to Hebrew names not found as names in Tanakh. I don't know why Reb Chaim has this kepeda. I don't think it's shared by most Gedolei Yisrael. But there's nowhere in this tshuva that I know of where he says that. Now, Rav Moshe does say, as we saw, it's nice to name after tzaddikim, whether contemporary great people or great people in Tanakh. And he does say that if you're choosing a name, you should name after a person. In other words, there's a preference, perhaps, to name after a person, whether it's a person in Tanakh or a contemporary person, as opposed to picking a nice word, which many of the modern names are just nice words. Now, those are the ones that Reb Chaim objects to. Name like Bracha.
Thank you. Well, like his own sisters have names like that.
Right. So, I don't know why Reb Chaim has that kepeda. I haven't heard other people have it. Reb Chaim is definitely gadol hador, and he's a bar hachi, and the like. But that's his shita, that it be a name of a person from Tanakh. Or again, I don't think his objection is to Yiddish names. What he doesn't like is the more modern trend of basically taking a nice Hebrew word and using that as a name. But as I said, I don't think that you don't see that anywhere here. Again, Rav Moshe sort of thinks that you know, given an option with nothing else, you would want to name after a person, as opposed to naming after a word, because of that chazal, that we name after people. So I don't think, exactly, from Rav Moshe's tshuva, if you knew a great shira or a great bracha and you wanted a name after that, that would be fine. He's no issue with that, as far as I know. Right? So there's nowhere in this tshuva of Rav Moshe that you see that kepeda, I don't think. And as I said, I don't know the source for Reb Chaim's kepeda. He doesn't object to the Yiddish names, even though they're also made up at some point. I assume that they became part of our heritage, and therefore it's okay. And I suppose he feels that these names aren't yet. I don't know. I don't know what he would say if you say, I want a name after a Shira. Not making up the name Shira, but there's a great tzadekes named Shira, and I want a name after her. I don't know what he would say. I don't know.
I know a family that has the name Chiena. And Chiena was supposedly some, like, Rebbetzin who's, like, born over in Poland or France, mm-hmm. or German, something like that. And that also is, like, doesn't mean anything in Hebrew, supposedly doesn't mean anything in Yiddish, like I would...
Right. So, that's following this chazal that Rav Moshe cites of naming after people.
Why do we name first after relatives before, like, names in Tanakh or names to Deacon? Especially a lot of people don't have relatives that are so great.
I don't think that that's a halacha or necessarily even a minhag. I think it's chesed, meaning to say people want to give nachas to their parents, to their grandparents, and the like. And it feels nice. I mean, is it the idea of I don't know the answer to that question. Is there a mila to doing that because somehow or another it's a zechus for their neshama or the like? I think that's something people assume. That's the assumption, and you're helping them by doing it. I don't know the extent to which there's a makor for that, but that is, I think, what people think. But even if there isn't, oftentimes it's still an act of kibud, of kavod.
But, like, let's say we say that, like, the name has an impact on a child. Why wouldn't you want to give it, like, the best name possible?
I agree. I think that there's a hesitation for naming after Rishayim. And if a person does want to name after someone like that, not because they're Rishayim, but whatever, you don't want your own child to follow exactly in their footsteps. So that's why what you should do is what Rav Moshe writes over here, which is you add a name, you change a name, and you're not really naming after them, and then that kepeda doesn't exist anymore. So when you change the name, so then it's not that name. And then you're not really naming after them. So it makes the person feel good. Let's say a person's grandparent. Let's say they want a name after the grandparent, but the grandparent wasn't from, so they don't want to give the exact name. But Alts Kibud Avaim, they want a name after them. So if you go ahead and you take one name and you change one name, like Rav Moshe here is suggesting, calling her Chana Gittel. So then you've accomplished both things. On the one hand, you've done Kibud Avaim by taking some aspect of that name and perpetuating their legacy, but at the same time, you haven't copied their name such that whatever metaphysical connection there would be between the new child and the departed person doesn't really exist on that same level. So I think that's what a lot of people try to do, that when you take half the name, as it were, you're able to accomplish both things. Okay. So, I don't have so much time. A bunch of other things I want to do with you, but I guess we'll do. This is actually a related point. A couple points over here relating to the beginning of the Sheba. The first piece I wanted to see with you is from the Netziv. Vatimale ha'aretz osam. Right? This is the Jewish people are fruitful and they multiply. And it says Vatimale ha'aretz osam. So if you take a look here at the Netziv, in the right column, Mehem Yibay. It shouldn't say Vatimale ha'aretz osam. It should say Vatimale ha'aretz mehem. V'chein tergum onkelos minhon. So Avalashon ha'mikra osam, balalamed, delo eretz goshen levad ha'isa. I think one famous part, he's not saying this. We'll see, it's actually a similar conclusion. Is Vatimale ha'aretz osam means the land filled them, meaning to say they became Egyptian-like. They became full of the land. They lost that Jewish identity. He doesn't go there. He says a different shot. He says that this comes to show that they truly filled the land, not just Eretz Goshen, which was special for the Jews, Elafilu kol Eretz Mitzrayim, Shahaisa Ikar Yeshivas in Mitzrayim. Mikol Malakom, Meleya Haaretz Es Yisrael. The land was filled with the Jews. Umashmas Osam Be'imam. Tumoshka Sadr Sefer Vayikra, Ala Pasuk Vazivchu, Zivche Shlamim Lashem Osam. Vehaya kol makom panui, Shematu Yisrael, Laknos Vladur Nesiash Vashama, wherever the Jews could find a place to live, that's where they went. As it were, they left the ghettos and they settled in all of Egypt. Vayner diksiv, the makas becharos, upasach Hashem ala pesach. What a great raya! Hareshayu arvi batei Yisrael bekarev batei Mitzrayim. Why is it called Pesach? Because Hashem passed over the Jewish houses in smiting the Egyptians, meaning to say they lived in close proximity. They had left the ghetto. Va'af algav shivur lahalan shepar nigas Yisrael v'lachtam l'ador b'meitzar kedei l'harspil adatam. Even though Paro tried to actually get them to live in the ghetto, mikol makom hayu ba'ofen shenisharu b'kerev amei arei Mitzrayim bein b'tayim. Uva ha'kasov la'akdim b'zeh sibas sinas Mitzrayim b'gzeres malchus. So, and Siv says that the placement over here is teaching us a very good, important thing. This pasuk is the pasuk that precedes, that juxtaposes the description of the persecution and enslavement of the Jews. And the pasuk therefore implies that the precipitous, that the cause for that enslavement was the Jews filling the land. Umachsheva chshad ma shelo ala al das Yisrael. Why did the Egyptians start thinking, the Jews are becoming so many, they're going to throw us out of our own land? Why was that? Because the Jews were moving into the Egyptian neighborhoods. Kol zeba mishum shebikshu latzeis miratzom Yaakov avim. This all happened because they sought to go against the wishes of Yaakov. Sheyeshu dafka be'eretz Goshen. Yaakov wished for them to live in their own neighborhoods. In Eretz Goshen, Kadesh Yu, Badad v'Niv Dalman Mitzrayim, so they would be separate from the rest of the Egyptians. Kamosh Kasati Parshas Vayigash, Avalheim Lo Ratzu Kein. They didn't want to do this. Uvishmos Rabba Isa Od Shapasku Lamul Mizatam Shamunia Kemitzrim. This wasn't just about where they lived, but once they moved into the Egyptian neighborhoods, they started saying, "Well, we are going to stop circumcising ourselves, so we look Egyptian, so we're no longer distinct." once they started living with them, matzu tov lahem l'shtavos l'mitzrayim, they tried to be similar. V'lo yiyu nikarim shema yudi. It wouldn't be so noticeable that they were Jewish. U'mishum zebir b'medrash shehafach Hashem libam l'sno oso. And this is what caused Hashem to cause the Mitzrim to hate us. The Netziv here is noting that a lot of times Jews think that if we look like and act like the non-Jews, then the non-Jews won't hate us. All we have to do is be more like them. The cause of anti-Semitism is our strong and distinct Jewish identity. Now, what's quite remarkable, we're not going to have a chance to read the whole piece, I'll read you a little more, but the Netziv, of course, is writing this close to 100 years before the Holocaust. And he writes that people, and also, I didn't give it to you, but there's another piece that I was going to read with you from the Mesh Chachma, the Or Sameach, Meir Simcha Dvinsk, who also lived sometime before the Holocaust. It's from the Mesh Chachma and Vayikra Perk Chavav on the Tochacha. And he says a very similar thing. People think that if we act like the Germans, they'll stop hating us. But that's wrong. And in fact, the Netziv over here says really the opposite is the case. The Krabi Arna b'pasuk b'sefer Bereishis ala pasuk yiger yezer acha the Gomer asher hisiba shebechol dor v'ador omdim aleinu l'chaloseinu v'shvil she'enanu rotzim lios kegerim v'nevdalim min ha'umos. The reason why b'chol dor v'ador omdim aleinu l'chaloseinu is because we don't want to be gerim, we want to be like everyone else. There's a famous essay by the Netziv on Shir HaShirim on the topic of anti-Semitism where he elaborates on this point much more. As I said, the Mesh Chachma says it as well. A bunch of other things I wanted to talk to you about, but alas, we're almost out of time. I'll tell you one last very interesting vart. Just something to think about. Small. One of the surprising things that we read about in this week's Parsha, and something that we often wonder about, is the request to leave Mitzrayim for 3 days. Why that? Why is there a need for that lie? Maybe we could talk more about this next week, since relevant to next week's parsha also. Right? Very strange. Why? Presumably the Jewish people didn't have any intention to leave for 3 days and come back. And to clarify, the question isn't why was it morally justified. We could definitely justify it morally. If a person is kidnapped and they say to their captors, you know, is it okay if I just go on a walk around the block and I'll come right back in 5 minutes? And they say yes to then, you know, run away. Nobody would say that there's anything wrong with that. So the Jewish people were, of course, unfairly enslaved and persecuted, and if lying would help them get out, so that would have been okay. But Hayad Hashem Tiktzar, right? They're leaving Benisim v'Niflos. Bnei Yisrael Yatzu v'Yad Ramah. So why'd they need to resort to these shenanigans? Interesting question. So I'll mention one answer. Next time we'll see some answers in Rishonim. This is an answer from Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, I saw. An interesting theory. He suggests that when they initially asked for 3 days, that was, in fact, a sincere request. He notes that that was only requested at the beginning. And had Paro said yes, they would have gone for a 3-day Shabbaton, an inspirational retreat. The Jewish people had sunk to the 49th level of Tumah, and there was fear that if they stayed in Egypt any longer, they would assimilate, they would be no longer worthy of redemption. But a Shabbaton could have given them enough chizuk, and then they would have remained in Egypt for another 190 years, as was the initial plan, to be there for 400 years. But what happened? Paro refuses. He's absolutely staunch, not willing to negotiate, not willing to give them even one weekend off. He could have said yes. He could have even made sure they come back, you know, send out his army, whatever it is, who knows. But he didn't. So then they had no choice but to leave entirely. And that's why we don't find Moshe asking for that except towards the beginning for the 3 days. And he suggests that's why it was necessary for the workload to increase after the request, Tachbad Alena Savoda, because now all that work that would have perhaps been spread out over many years had to be compressed into a short period of time and the like. But he suggests that the 3-day request was actually meant 100% sincerely, and that could have been enough had Paro been more reasonable, then it would have worked. Okay, so maybe next week we'll see some answers found in the Rishonim. The Rishonim give a number of really fascinating, telling answers. Okay, have a good night.
Thank you. Very few questions, actually, about last year's parsha.
Oh, boy.
Did Yosef... I assume that Yosef knew that they weren't meant to be Mitzrayim.
Well... Yes. I mean, what...